Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Billy Beck. I'm with Iowa State University, Department of Natural Resource Ecology and Management. This is my third Society's meeting, so I'm pretty excited to be here. They get better every year. I'd like to share with you some research we're involved with looking at total phosphorus and suspended sediment contributions from stream banks in central Iowa. Really quick, I want to acknowledge my co-authors and our funding entities. All right. Well, stream bank erosion is a ubiquitous sight around the Midwest, especially in Iowa. We're concerned about this for a lot of reasons. Obviously, sediment, excess sediment in waterways can impact aquatic habitat, fill drinking water reservoirs, whatnot. But in Iowa, we're starting to get more and more concerned about sediment-bound phosphorus. There's a growing body of literature saying that these banks are a significant source of phosphorus and sediment to these watersheds. However, in Iowa, even though we see this every day walking around, we really don't have a lot of good numbers on what these banks are contributing to the loads we see exiting these watersheds. So hopefully this work is aimed to kind of fill that knowledge gap. Especially, a great example of this knowledge gap is the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy, which was crafted in 2013. There's really no stream bank component in it. There's no in-channel phosphorus component in it. So it's kind of a black box. So this work is hopefully to inform those efforts. Again, so taking a big step back, the overall project with this is really looking at in-channel phosphorus. Things like storage, adsorption, desorption, bed erosion. And again, we'd really like to inform the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy and other efforts to involve in nutrient management. Today, I'm just going to talk about a small piece, the stream bank component, what's coming off these banks. Objectives, we really just want to get some numbers. We want to quantify how much sediment, how much phosphorus is leaving these banks yearly. And we're going to go a step further, and we're going to kind of break up the banks into the original alluvial deposition units that built these things up through history. And I'll introduce you to those in a second. So real quick, here's our study watershed, central Iowa, 5,200 hectares. If I could sum this up in one word, it's altered. This thing's been straightened. It's been patterned tile drain. Very, very, very screwed up hydrology to what it was once under native tallgrass prairie. So another thing that makes this study so incredible to me is we have stream gauge data going back to about 1995 with water quality data from USGS and ARS. So thank you for that. At two sites on the upper end and the lower end. So that's really nice in my book. Again, very, very, very flashy hydrology. You can see this photo was a high water mark a few days after I was out there walking around. Here's a typical hydrograph. These events are in and out of this place in under a day. You know, it's pretty incredible being out there. So very flashy hydrology. Because of that, we get a lot of channel incision. We've got very, very tall banks, very cohesive banks, as you can see here. And really, the flow, the fluvial contact with the upper reaches of the bank is quite rare. So it's incredibly flashy and very incised here. So that's kind of a glimpse into what we're, the background of what we're dealing with. So I want to introduce you to these three stream bank alluvial units. For the rest of the talk, I'm going to refer to them as members. They're members of the DeForest Formation that was laid down after the glaciers were receding about 10,000 years ago. So we get in our time machine here. We'll start at the bottom. This is the Gunder member. This was laid down about 10,500 to 3,500 years ago under a pretty heavy flow regime. So this has a lot of sand in it. Above that is the Roberts Creek. This was kind of the tall grass prairie surface back in hundreds of years ago. This was laid down between 3,500 and 500 years before present. This was kind of a more mellow flow regime. So there's a lot more clay in the Roberts Creek. And finally, up top, we've got the Camp Creek. This is all kind of the post-Euro settlement alluvium that came off the uplands when we had maybe the not the best farming practices at, you know, around the turn of the century and whatnot. So you can see, you know, here's thousands of years of deposition. Here's a couple hundred years of deposition. So if you look at Keith Schilling's work in this watershed and others, this is pretty consistent as you go up and down the watershed, this layering, the thickness, and just the position here. So very, very consistent throughout the watershed. Again, here's kind of an up-close view. If we go from top to bottom, here's your Camp Creek member. Very nice, fine, granular structure, light color. Get down to the Roberts Creek. Nice, dark, organic matter rich, you know, prairie soil. Subangular, blocky structure. And then finally, we get down to the Gunder, which is this just dense, cohesive mass. Kind of a massive structure. Nice blade appearance with some redoxomorphic features in there. But if you're talking texture, Camp has the most silt. Roberts has the most clay. Gunder has the most sand. And I really want to introduce you to the fourth member here of the party. This is colluvium, and I think this is going to be really important as we go on through the talk. This is kind of a typical stream bank. You've got vertical sections of Camp Creek and Robert Creek, and then you've got this colluvium, all the stuff that's fallen off, kind of flaked off the top and builds up at the bank toe. Typically burying the Gunder, although the Gunder is exposed in many areas. But this is kind of a common sight out there. You just get all this material falling down at the toe of the bank and building up over time. And that colluvium is caused by, I think, two main processes. Weathering is one. In the winter, freeze-thaw. In the summer, wet-dry. And this is incredible. This is the day after a snowfall, and it's already coming down. In the winter, we'll go out there and just sit on a sunny stream bank, a south-facing bank where it's accentuated. And you can hear and see this stuff falling down into the water. It's quite incredible, the weathering of this material. And this really changes the properties of the original depositional units. Another one's mass wasting. So if that was kind of a trickle, this is kind of a deluge of soil. Just the banks, for some reason, just fail. And you get this mass amount of sediment, soil tumbling down, building up at the bank toe, mixing, changing its physical properties and whatnot. So this is a common site we see out there, especially in the channel evolution stage that we're in. Again, here's a good bank, Camp, Roberts Creek, and you get this is in spring, a lot of freeze thaw, you get this kind of wedge of colluvium building up at the toe. Along comes an event, and it's all gone. So, and you can see it's starting over right now again, you know, very, very recently afterwards. So, big process out there, I think, in terms of sediment and phosphorus. So why do we even care about these individual members at all? Why don't we just look at the bank, you know, get a square area, get a volume that erodes into the stream? But as you can see, just from looking at the physical appearance, there is a lot of variance in these members, especially when it comes to contributing phosphorus to the waterway. Remember, the big picture project is about phosphorus. So these have different characteristics inherently that's going to make this sediment behave differently as a source or a sink once it gets eroded into the stream. And if you look at John Kovar's work, Michael Thompson, Soroso, Rabitomo, you know, this may be a big deal. They differ in equilibrium phosphorus concentration, degree of phosphorus saturation. So they're very, very different on how they're going to behave once they get eroded into the stream channel. So that's why we're looking at these individual units. So my hypothesis from being out there in the watershed and looking around for all these years is I think colluvium is the greatest contributor of the units to sediment and total phosphorus loads in this watershed. And I think that weathering and mass wasting process of the bank material is a very important factor governing the loads we see exiting these watersheds. So real quick methods. We essentially used stream bank pins to estimate the recession rate of these stream banks. Essentially just a metal rod. We go out every month or after every large flow event, and we measure the recession on that rod. And in the case of colluvium, we can measure the recession or the accumulation. They're installed in a grid pattern aimed at the members themselves. And we also go out and kind of do this grid survey where we look at, okay, how much surface area of these eroding banks is represented by the individual members. So if we have a member recession rate, we have a member surface area, that can get us a volume of material loss to the channel. And if we have the bulk density and the total phosphorus concentrations of the soil, that can get us a mass of sediment and total phosphorus. One thing we really had to be careful of out in the field is being consistent about identifying the different members. It's not always a perfect layer cake like that you see. So we had to really be consistent on just relying on position, texture and structure, color, and other visual cues. The Camp Creek has some really beautiful striations in it. So we really had to be consistent about assigning a member to each of these rates. So in the field, colluvium was a little bit different. We had to kind of say to ourselves, has this material moved? Has it been changed, moved in any way from its original deposition to the toe? Because if it did, it's going to have different properties and behave differently, especially as far as erodibility. So again, these are all very different in terms of how easily they are eroded. Just here's a few real quick examples. Obviously, bulk density, the colluvium is the lowest, about 1.2. So thinking it would be much more easily erodible. Gunder is about 1.6, so much denser, less harder material to erode. Silt content, silt's easy to move. It doesn't have the cohesion of clays. It doesn't have the weight of sand. Camp and colluvium, again, top most silt content. And then gunder, the lowest, probably, more erodible, less erodible. Patterns kind of establishing here. Critical shear stress. This is a very interesting parameter. Shear stress is basically the force that the flowing water exerts on the face of that bank. And each soil kind of has its own critical shear stress, that threshold where the water starts to peel off and starts eroding the particles and aggregates. So Lazell and Mandel in 2014 in Kansas did an in-situ study looking at camp and gunder. Camp was about 1 pascal critical shear stress, which is fairly low in the grand scheme of things. Gunder was about 10.4. Now that's pretty high, so pretty low erodibility there. And right now, we're actually using a 40-foot hydraulic flume to investigate the other two members in collaboration with the engineering department, Ag and Biosystems Engineering. So that should be very exciting. All right, so just some quick results. Obviously, as you saw from the photos, the colluvium dominates the surface area of these eroding banks, of the eroding bank lengths, and the length up and down the watershed. Followed, far behind by Camp, Roberts, and then finally the gunner. So colluvium really dominates the surfaces out there. So note, we got this recession rate, we've got the surface area that's erosive. We can come up with a kind of cumulative sediment contribution for each member over a 2-year period from May of 15 to April 17. As you can see, again, colluvium is really at the top, followed by the others in tow, Roberts, Gunder, and the Camp. So colluvium is really the main contributor of the four units here. And just to put this in context, the 2015 watershed load for suspended sediment was about 11,000 megagrams. That's about 34% if you add up all the bank members there. So again, member TP concentration was about 170 to 300. Gunder with the most. Again, we've got that TP. Now again, colluvium is also the number one of the bank units contributor to the loads we see in the watershed. Quick context, the 2015 TP load was 9.5 megagrams. All right, so tentative conclusions. Colluvial material dominates the bank erosive, the surface area of the eroding banks. It's the greatest contributing unit for sediment and total phosphorus in this watershed. And I really believe weathering and the stratigraphy of these alluvial units plays a huge role in governing what we see exiting these watersheds. And just to kind of close on this photo, I really like this photo. You can see the gunder at the base, very cohesive, very solid. And you see this alluvial material just draping it like a veneer. So this material is just it's changed so much from that weathering and preparation, builds up at the toe, and now has a much different erodibility. So again, I think these processes, and not just the soil intrinsic characteristics alone, really govern the loads we're seeing coming out of these watersheds. So thank you so much. Our team, you can follow at Billy J. Beck on Twitter, and I've got a poster about in-channel storage tonight. So thank you for attending. Thank you so much.
Questions.
Oh, thank you.
At least for one or so short ones.
Yes.
One of the questions I have is when you showed your breakdown of colluvium and your top two, do you take into account that you said earlier that the colluvium is actually coming from those two areas?
Correct.
Would it not be the same? Or when you're showing different graphs,
yes,
yet your colluvium is a composite of the other two. How do you separate those?
That's a great question. We've got to go into a really good mass balance. Obviously, we ID'd them in the field, and then we're taking gross erosion here. So, or not gross, net erosion. So, we're gonna have to kind of do a mass balance. But you're absolutely right. It's very tricky. These stream bank pin studies are fraught with kind of errors and assumptions. But that's an excellent point. Yeah. So, yes.
Maybe it's too early to answer. What's the relative contribution of this kind of sponsors versus just the regular farming practices?
We are looking into that. So one of the big goals of this is to kind of create a phosphorus budget for this watershed. So we're looking at overland flow, shallow groundwater, Unfortunately, not tile drainage, but yes, we will get all that in the end. So, studies in Iowa. Yeah, studies in Iowa have shown up to 86% contribution from banks. So, and it's so dynamic over each year. So it's, and phosphorus is funny because it's so episodic. So, but yeah, I think it's gonna be high. And studies in the few studies in Iowa have shown that. So.
Thank you.